The February cyber attack on Change Healthcare continues to cause prescription delays, and that is stressful on patients and doctors, but not if the doctors are using iCoreRx cloud e-prescribing software. iCoreRx had zero interruption, and iCoreRx is a product of iCoreConnect, whose full platform of secure products helps streamline workflow and increase revenue. Check them out at iCoreConnect.com/MGMA.
Well, hi, everyone. This is Daniel Williams, senior editor at MGMA and host of the MGMA Podcast Network. We are joined today by Sarah Arriato. I hope I got that right, Sarah. You know, you shared with me some information and just want to make sure on that. So Sarah and I met a couple of years ago through an organization called Mindful Leader. We were both going through different programs there and then served on a council together. And today we're going to be talking about toxic cultures. So Sarah, first, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Daniel. And you did perfect on my name. So well done.
Well, thank you so much. So I want to give a little more context to who Sarah is. So she has spent 20 years in oncology as a healthcare clinician and consultant, and has also branched out into public speaking, authoring a couple of books. What else would you like to share as far as your background, Sarah?
Yeah, thanks, Daniel. You nailed it in terms of my corporate job and corporate life, managing multiple cancer centers, treating patients, and then being a consultant to help with change management, which nobody likes change. And I found out five years after I started that people go through the same stages of grief when they're forced to change. That would have been helpful 5 years earlier. But that was my corporate life. And then how I got here is really combining my passion for wellness and well-being and realizing that I was using those tools to help support my clients and team. And once I made that realization and how well they fit hand in hand and how important they are, here I am trying to combine those two and helping leaders and other corporations do the same.
Yeah, in reading about your background, I was going, this sounds so much like what I experienced, because you said you were have been a people pleaser, that you are always that one to put out the fires, to help others. And then suddenly you realized, I need help myself. I'm burning out here. So talk a little bit about that realization and then some of the things that you did to correct that.
Yeah. So I think we talked about this a little bit before, but I had chronic low-level stress, which it's important to identify the low-level stress because people know when they go through a large life change, a death, a divorce, losing a job, something big, you know that you're stressed out. And people can typically deal with it or they have support to talk about it. But when you're in a chronic state of low-level stress like I was, I didn't even realize I was stressed. It was just my normal. So I was traveling a lot. I was eating unhealthy. I was working, without exaggerating, 14 to 16 hours a day, 6 days a week. And that was just my life. And I thought that that was just normal. I was trying to climb the corporate ladder. I am a perfectionist and, as you mentioned, people pleaser. Yeah. So I wanted everything to be perfect. I wanted to serve everyone and I wanted to be the best at everything I did. And what I didn't realize is at the time, one, nothing's perfect. So no matter how hard I try, I'm human. It was never going to be absolutely perfect. And I was burning myself out. And so by doing that, no one was really getting my best, including myself. And it wasn't until I really started having unmanageable health issues where I was so tired, healthy. I worked out. Yeah. I started eating right, but I was still so tired and just didn't feel good. And I can't explain it any other way than I just didn't feel good. And then that led to tests and studies and surgeries and all sorts of exploratory avenues with my healthcare team to find out that it was stress. And once I best managed my stress, my whole life changed. And it sounds so simple, like, oh, you were just stressed and change your life, but it really does affect everything. And if you don't recognize it, it can lead to severe health issues, which I was lucky I didn't have severe health issues. But yeah, it leads to that way for a lot of clients, or at the time, patients when I was in the clinic.
Yeah, I just connected so much with what you were saying just now, and in reading more about your story on your website. I think you have a quote in there, if I get it right, that you feel better than you did in your 20s. And when I read that, I went, ding, ding, ding. That is how I feel. I tell this to people all the time. I mean, I was in and out of all kinds of tests, procedures, and then I'm very frank about this. After the umpteenth procedure that I had, and they again found that we're not finding anything, but I felt horrible. The doctor just, you know, put his hand on my shoulder and just said, I think you might need to go talk to somebody, because I think it's more, I'm being just transparent with you. We're not finding anything physically. We know that you feel terrible, but we're not finding anything physical. And there may be things that you're, you know, developing in your mind, your thinking, and the stress that that's creating. Just wanted to share that. Any thoughts on that as well?
Absolutely. So first of all, kudos to your healthcare team, because, yeah, you know, all of our practitioners, I believe, they went into the field because they want to help people, but they're specialized and they're trained in certain areas. And so they use the tools that they have available to them, just like we try to use the tools we have available to us. And not all healthcare providers have that scope of practice, if you will, to look at the patient holistically. A lot of times they're provided with the information we as patients give them. And so they're trying to do symptom management versus really look at what could be causing these symptoms, right? Is it a financial issue? Is it stress at work? Is it family? What is it that's causing these ailments, and then helping support us on that? So first of all, I think that's fantastic that your healthcare team recognized that. I was fortunate that my healthcare team supported that. It was many, many years, and finally an endocrinologist that validated my feeling that it was something else. But I really had to do a lot of seeking outside. And that's really why I'm excited to be doing what I'm doing now, is combining what I've learned from my personal experience with my corporate and clinical background to provide other individuals and teams this same benefit. Because if we're being frank, you and I are very lucky that we had this passion or this interest and the ability to seek it, right? Not everybody has that interest or even know where to start to find out what could be causing this. Why am I not feeling right? Or the means to pay for courses and education and you know, those supplemental information, if you will. So wonderful.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. So I wanted to bring this out to everybody who's listening, but April is National Stress Awareness Month. Sarah and I are sitting here talking about some personal stresses that we've had. But one of the areas where Sarah speaks, a topic area, is on toxic cultures. And first, I want to couch this, Sarah, where you can explain how a toxic culture can really add to that stress level. Talk about that and share with us maybe some of the experiences that you've had and gotten through.
Yeah. So I'm debating on renaming it, and I'll tell you the reason why.
Okay.
Is when I first started speaking about this, I called it toxic workplaces, because I had so many individuals coming to me talking about their toxic experience. And then I realized, well, if you're the toxic leader, you may not resonate with this. So also think of it as supporting your team through change, because as I mentioned earlier on, some people view change as toxic, right? So, so let's just be clear. It doesn't necessarily need to be interpersonal issues. It could just be change that's occurring in the workplace. But back to when I was speaking and it was just labeled toxic workplaces, what I was finding is how leaders and individuals, no one shows up thinking, I'm going to make this day miserable for myself and my teammates. That's the good news. Yeah. Yeah. But what I didn't realize is how vast this toxic work culture, or at least the perception of toxic work culture, is affecting us. And I don't know if it was enhanced by the pandemic. I kind of feel like it was, because individuals are struggling more and we're human. So we're going to bring our personal lives to work. We're going to bring our work lives home. And if anyone thinks otherwise, think about when you couldn't sleep at night. What woke you up? Probably work, right? Or if you were distracted at work, what was bothering you? Probably something at home, worrying about a parent, a partner, or a child. So it's not just the dynamic of work, it's really what's going on in individuals' lives and then how it impacts the team and work. And not addressing it is what escalates and turns that environment into a toxic workplace. So there's a lot of different factors. It's all combined, and we need to support our individuals as well as the teams. And really starting with the leaders. Leaders are as well-intended as they can be, but if they don't have the tools or they aren't demonstrating their own self-care, it's communicating to the team that they aren't supposed to either.
Okay. Let's look at some of the key differences then between a toxic versus a positive work environment.
Yeah. So toxic workplaces, just like we were talking about our health concerns, where it just didn't feel right and we couldn't necessarily, you know, point our finger to it, a toxic workplace is very similar. You may not be able to pinpoint exactly what it is, but you know it just doesn't feel right. It could be lack of psychological safety. It could be feeling undervalued or appreciated. It could be the perception of a hustle and grind culture that you as a person don't matter, that you're just a number. There's a lot of different factors that can go into that. Communication is another big one, where oftentimes I find that clients are so busy in their day-to-day. They're rushing from meeting to meeting to meeting. They're sending off multiple emails at a time. They're not really pausing to think of how could this be received. They're just firing off information because they need to get their job done. And what can happen is a result is people are feeling like, oh, that person doesn't like me, or, you know, I feel like just a number and I'm just being tossed projects and information. I don't have the bandwidth, but I don't feel like I can speak up and communicate this because I'll have repercussions. On the flip side, a positive work culture is one that you do feel psychologically safe. You feel like you can go to your leader or go to your team and say, hey, I know you have this project for me. I'm struggling with the bandwidth. Can I get help? Or you use I statements and it's perceived less as blaming because you're owning your own experience. I am struggling. I am experiencing. I fill in the blank. Also, the starting with yourself and pausing before you hop from meeting to meeting to meeting or firing off those emails so that you can collect your thoughts, and just that 30 seconds of browsing through your email again before you hit send can make a huge difference in how it's received and then how that interaction continues throughout your time working together.
Mm-hmm. I think you defined it, but I want to go back to it because you use that term psychological safety. And if you could define that, just give us some examples of what that really looks like in the workplace.
Yeah, very, very important. One of the most important things that I have found both in managing people and in helping clients is it's the perception that it's okay to make mistakes, that it's okay to self-report. So for example, when I was in oncology, if someone documented incorrectly or forgot to upload a documentation into the electronic chart, they would self-report. And we created a culture where they knew, okay, yes, that's part of my job. I was supposed to do that. It can be fixed. Almost everything can be fixed. And so having that confidence, both in your leadership and in your team, that you can say, hey, I messed up, I'll fix it. Or, hey, I messed up, can I get help fixing it? And not the fear of repercussions or being fired is huge, because people, and there's a lot of studies to support this, people are more willing to self-report and they have less errors and issues within the organization, because people do feel like they can take that pause, that they can own their mistakes or own something that didn't go well, and then they can fix it together as a team, versus feeling like, well, if I admit that I made this mistake, am I going to get fired? Am I going to get a bad review? Am I going to be punished? And then what do? They cover it up. And so now we haven't fixed the problem. We've actually made it worse because nobody knows, or it's done incorrectly over and over again.
Yeah, I did notice something coming out of the pandemic when we, even before we physically returned to work, but we were, communicating virtually through Zoom calls and that sort of thing. There was an openness to vulnerability. Like if someone was struggling, I noticed a lot more that people were willing to kind of raise a hand and say, I need help, asking for help. But let's say, pointing to cultures like you were talking about, where there may not be the current situation where someone would feel that empowerment to do so, what can the leaders do from supervisors and managers? What can they do to create an environment where someone would feel perfectly comfortable coming to them and going, I need to raise my hand. I'm struggling here and I need help.
Yes, this is an excellent question. And it really does set the tone for the work culture and for the team. So first of all, the leaders have to be comfortable being vulnerable themselves. And Brené Brown talks about shame and vulnerability a lot. I love following her. But she has done studies for 20 years proving that vulnerability is not weakness. It's actually strength demonstrated. And so as a leader saying, not oversharing, right? But saying, hey, I'm struggling with something right now. I trust you, Daniel, to take over this project and I will support you in it. It does several things. One, it humanizes your leader. It helps to communicate to the team that it's okay to admit that you can't do everything. If everyone, if one person could do everything, we wouldn't need companies. You would be a one-person show, right? That's why there's a team. So that's important. And then it also gives your team the ability, human nature is we want to help people. So it gives your team the ability to step up and support you and for you to acknowledge their strengths. So in that example where if I'm the leader and I say, I'm struggling, I've got a lot of projects right now, Daniel, I trust you to take it on and I'll support you. It gives you, Daniel, the ability to own it, to showcase your skills and to grow as an individual. That's so much power in a team, and it's trust. It's showing that the leader trusts their team to do a good job without them micromanaging. So it's so important for the leader to demonstrate. You can't just, it's just like, I liken it to parents. Right. I really love my child. I really care about my team, right? Yeah. I'm not going to tell my child to not smoke as I'm smoking a cigarette, right? So you can't tell your team as a leader, oh, be vulnerable and everything will be okay, but then act like you're a robot and you don't have feelings or struggles yourself.
Mm-hmm. Do you have an example? Is there like a dialogue that you could share with us what that would look like in a practice?
Yeah. So actually, this happened to me when I was managing some cancer centers. I had multiple cancer centers under my scope. We were going through a lot of change. We had come from a private practice to now part of a large health system. People don't like change. That was a struggle. Right. We were also transitioning electronic medical record systems, which is a huge undertaking. And we were putting in a new machine. I don't know if we could have had more change at one time. And so I had a lot on my plate, and my priorities were the people. And so I stepped back and asked for volunteers. I also asked what lit people up, both with work and outside of work. And the reason I bring that up, the reason I feel it's important, is it tells you a lot about someone and their personality and what motivates them to know what drives them outside of work. So when I asked for volunteers, I had several volunteers that one wanted to be a leader. She really felt like she was a leader, but she didn't have the title on the team. And she was just looking for more responsibility. I also had one that loved documentation. They were getting a bit burnt out. Oncology can be a very heavy space, and they were getting burnt out from giving all to their patients. And so I was able to, one, prevent both of them from burning out in different areas, and two, showcase their skills and to tell the team, you guys are capable. You're able to take over this, and I trust you. I believe in you. In the first 8 months of using both my corporate and our passion, as we were talking about mindfulness and things like that, I was able to transform my team's engagement by 26% in the first 8 months. And it was just by doing that. It was treating them as humans. It was admitting that I'm human. I'm not perfect, and I'm not here to do everything and tell you what to do. We are here as a team to support each other. And how can we do that? And it really is by, you know, delegating and helping showcase their skills and their interest.
For our listeners that would want to replicate that, how did you measure it? You said there was a 26% increase in engagement. What did that look like?
Yeah. So for me, it was very easy, and it doesn't have to be hard, which is the great news. I was fortunate that right before I was brought on and recruited, they had done a survey, just the standard survey that they did for all of the different departments in this healthcare system. The team was going through a lot of change, so that they knew that they needed to track and really care for this team. So I appreciated the health system having that data before I even got there. And then it just so happened that 8 months after I started, it was the annual survey. And so my group was targeted as one to watch for trending, so that the system, HR and team, would know how to support me to support my team. So I was very fortunate to have that before and after comparison, just by happenstance. For teams that, you know, you aren't lucky enough to start and they've just done the data, you can do your own survey. So if you have different objectives, whether through the organization or departmentally, you can use those as a before and after comparison. How engaged are you? How likely are you to recommend the place of employment? If you don't have something like that, or if it doesn't really target what you're trying to accomplish with your team, I also do surveys. And so you can create your own, or you can work with an organization or consultant that has pre and post surveys to track, because it's not an overnight thing, right? You really need to help facilitate and to trend what's working, what's not, and then adjust that way.
Okay. So we started this conversation. We both shared, we were vulnerable. We talked about how we had struggled with stress over time. Then we moved into teams. But as we wind down on this conversation, let's return to self-care again. What are some steps, some strategies, some tools that any of our listeners can provide themselves, that kind of resource, to make sure they're providing self-care?
Yeah. So I like to start easy, because I don't know about you, but as soon as I'm told I have to do something or I can't do something, it's exactly what I do or don't want to do. So, but let's start with three things. So body-wise, moving. A lot of people work remote, or they work in sedentary jobs. And so you're sitting in front of a computer all day long. It's hard on your back. It's hard on your body. It inhibits your circulation. So get up at least every 90 minutes. If you can get up every hour and just stretch, or walk around your department, walk around your block, walk around your house, even that little bit of movement will help. And it actually helps to clear your mind as well. So movement is key. I'm not asking you to go run a marathon. I'm just asking you to stand up, stretch, go get a glass of water. The second thing, we talked about mind really quickly. I am going to preface this, because when people would tell me to slow down and meditate, I would get viscerally upset. Because as you can see, I have a lot of energy, and I I'm very passionate in a lot of areas of my life. So I'm not telling you to meditate right off the bat. However, if you can just take 3 deep breaths, and bonus, if you can close your eyes and just breathe in through your nose and out through your nose or your mouth slowly, you'll be surprised at how much clearer you are in those 3 breaths before sending an email, before entering a meeting, before making a phone call. Just 3 breaths, super easy.
I just did 3 breaths and I feel better already.
Right? It's amazing. It's amazing. Yeah. And then the 3rd thing, as long as you're up and moving and you're taking a couple breaths, drink more water. We're primarily made up of water. What we put in our body does affect our mood. So rather than reaching for, you know, junk food or candy or soda, I'm not going to tell you to get rid of your coffee because I won't either. But just drink water, and you might be surprised at how much clearer and fresher you feel because you're hydrated and you're well nourished. So get up and move, walk around your house, grab a glass of water, take 3 deep breaths. It will change your life. And the more you do it, the better. You can't just, you know, have 1 salad and have a 6-pack, right? So this is something you have to keep doing, but it's easy. And then you might find that you want to enhance your skills. You want to learn more. You want to implement more. And if you do, that's great. If nothing else, these 3 tips will help.
Sarah, as we sign off here, I just want to ask you 1 final question then. Something you would recommend that people do who are listening right now, that as they're moving forward, what's something else they could do?
Thank you for the question. So I would say everyone's different. And one of the things that we typically do, especially if you're a perfectionist or people pleaser or leader, is we put off our interests until we're done with everything else. And we're never going to be done with everything else. There's always something to do. So if you want to go see that friend or go to that show or sit and read that book uninterrupted for 10, 15, 30 minutes, go do that. There will always be time to come back and do all of the things, but caring for yourself and doing things that you're interested in is so important because that's why we're working. We're working to fuel and to pay for our passions. We're not giving up our passions so that we can just work until we die. So care for yourself. And if there's something that you're interested in, make a priority to do it.
I love that. All right, Sarah, it was great catching up with you. And thanks for joining us on the podcast today.
Thank you for having me. So good to see you.
You too. So that is going to do it for this episode of Mindful Medicine through MGMA. I'm Daniel Williams. We have been joined today by Sarah Arriado. I think I got it again, but I love that. Sarah, it's been wonderful. And I just want to share with everyone in the episode show notes, I am going to provide some resources and links so you can just click right on those, get right into some different steps, the kind of things that Sarah was talking about on working with stress. Until then, thanks for being a podcast listener. Are you tired of dealing with time-consuming processes and outdated strategies? It's time for a change. Introducing Laserfish, the leading platform for optimizing process automation and data analytics. With Laserfish, you can transform your organization into a technology-driven powerhouse, ready to tackle any disruption that comes your way. Laserfish allows you to strategically optimize workflow automation so you can revamp cost-inefficient initiatives across your organization. Free up your staff's time so they can focus on more meaningful work. So don't let outdated processes hold you back. Unlock the power of Laserfish and take control of your organization's future. Visit laserfish.com today and learn how it can help you achieve efficiency, resilience, and success. Again, go to laserfish.com.